tuned to yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden years. I'm Mark Lefonier. In this hour, variety. Later on, from the Major Bowes Amateur Hour from 1935. But right now, an episode of the Chemtone Hour, featuring the mentalist Joseph Doninger from September 27, 1944, on the NBC Blue Network.
Finish brings you from Memphis, Tennessee,
the master mentalist,
the mental marvel,
the newest star in radio, Doninger.
Being in Memphis again is a real treat because I have never been received more generously anywhere. Your welcome is truly one of warmth. And I feel quite at home here. But before we get down to work, I'm sure that everybody would like to meet our judges of the evening. Bob Neal, would you do the honors?
Why, certainly, Doninger. Our first judge is the commanding general of the Memphis Army Service Depot, Brigadier General W.A. Danielson, who was a field artillery man in the last war.
I've traveled over the world, seen many amazing things. In fact, as an engineer, I've discovered many secrets. So tonight, if I can discover how Doninger reads so many people's thoughts, and could read the thoughts particularly of some birds in Berlin and Tokyo, I'd have the real secret weapon.
General, let me assure you, I cannot possibly read the minds or thoughts of rats and jackasses.
And here is the president of the 19th Century Club and chairman of the Memphis City Beautiful Commission, Mrs. W.B. Fowler.
It's a woman's prerogative to change her mind, they say. But having heard Mr. Doninger on the air before, tonight my mind's made up for a most enjoyable evening.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Fowler. And now, here's the former captain and second baseman of the St. Louis Cardinals, who's now doing a great job for Uncle Sam, Staff Sergeant Jimmy Brown.
I've often wondered about Mort Cooper's right arm and Stan Musial's bet, and I'm still wondering what happened last year in the World Series. But seriously, if I don't stop wondering about Dunn's, I'm going to be caught napping off at first, so let's see what happens.
All right, thank you, Jimmy. And our fourth judge tonight is a man I think a few of you might know, the famed maestro of Nashville's Grand Ole Opry, Roy Acuff.
Well, a lot of my friends listen in to Mr. Doninger, so I'm here to find out for them how he does this thing and all about it.
Well, thank you a lot, Roy. And now, Doninger, it's all yours.
Well, with such distinguished friends as I have here tonight as judges, well, practically anything is likely to happen, but I think it's about time I switch into action and give everything I can to my audience here in Memphis and to my listening audience everywhere.
Now, there is an impression of the audience tonight of someone that is concentrating a thought, or rather upon a thought, that is thinking of something relative to a Pullman ticket. Where does that come from, please? Won't you kindly raise your hand? A Pullman ticket, the young lady to the left of the auditorium. Seated in a box. Is that yours, young lady? Is that your thought?
Yes, sir.
That is your thought. Have you that ticket with you?
Yes, sir.
In your purse?
In my hand.
In your hand now.
Yes.
Are you asking me to give you the number of your Pullman ticket?
Yes, sir.
By the way, isn't that a half-rate ticket?
Yes, sir.
It is a half-rate ticket. Is the first digit an 8?
Yes, sir.
Is the next a 3?
Yes, sir.
A 9?
Yes, sir.
A 1?
Yes, sir.
An 8?
Yes, sir.
Are you also concentrating your mind upon the day, month, and year upon which you were born?
Yes, sir.
Does anyone in the audience know that other than you yourself?
Yes, sir.
How many?
2.
Who are they, please?
My mother and father.
Your mother and father. Now, you're seated. Well, they were. You are seated, as your mother and father is, at an approximate distance of 75 or 100 feet from my platform. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Now, concentrate your mind upon the month in which you were born. Were you born in the month of January?
Yes, sir.
upon the 10th day.
Yes, sir.
In the year 1929.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for standing. The initials F-A-W. Where does that come from, please? F-A-W. The lady about the 25th row in the center of the auditorium. Is that yours, young lady?
That's right.
Is that F-A-W-5?
Yes, it is.
What is that, please?
That's right.
That's correct. Aren't you also concentrating your mind upon a, I don't know what that is. I get the word little. Little black, is that correct?
That's right.
Little black Sambo?
Uh-huh.
Well, well, that's not subtle. Little black Sambo. Now, this other word, a series of words you have in mind. What is the nature of those words? Is that something in English or a foreign language? What is it?
I think it's Spanish.
You think it's Spanish?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't speak a word of Spanish, I regret to state, but I'll try and give it to you as closely as I can. Spell it in your mind, please. Is that B-E-S-E-M-I?
Something like that.
Yes,
I don't know
and
Spanish
the last word
either.
In your mind. Mucho, M-U-C-H-O.
Uh-huh, that's right.
That's correct.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. The lady or gentleman. Now, this is a young man's thought. Can I trust her? Where does it come from, please? The gentleman way down the left. My dear friend, you can trust her just as much as she can trust you. That's about a 50-50 offer. There is an impression that I received from someone, some lady or gentleman, was thinking of a series of numbers. I get the digits, 0499. Who recognizes that, please? That's part of it. The lady about the 18th row, is that correct, young lady?
Yes, that's
what
right.
What type of number is that, please?
That's a serial number.
Serial number. That is half of it, is it not?
That is right.
Have you your serial number memorized, or do you carry it with you?
I do not carry it with me.
Well, have you it memorized?
Yes.
Perfect. Is the rest of that number 352?
That is correct.
Thank you very much. The initials S-C-L. Where do they come from, please? Janley is the first name. Lady about the 30th row. We never met before, young lady. Stanley. You're thinking of Stanley?
That's right.
Is that Stanley Carl?
Right.
Is that Stanley Carl Lowenberg?
That is right.
Thank you. What was my name? I take it this lady thinks of her name, of course, in terms of a name before marriage, her maiden name, and telephone number. Whose thought does that be? I receive a mental impression of the initials M.B. Where does that come from, please? That is yours, Madden. Your maiden name, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Your name still, of course, is Minnie.
Yes, sir.
Minnie. I like that name. That's a pretty name. Minnie. Now, Minnie, the name, Madden, is that Buzzer, B-U-S-E-R?
Buser.
Buser. Oh, I spelled it correctly. I probably mispronounced it. I'm sorry. Buser is correct.
Yes, sir.
This phone number, is that your present number?
Yes, sir.
Good. You've had that number for quite some time.
Yes, sir.
Yes, you've had that number for many years, I should state. About 6 or 7, is that right?
Yes, sir.
The number, as I mentally receive it, is 23393. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Who is thinking of 33-? Who's thought, please? That's part of the fourth, part of a series of numbers. 36. Where does it come from? The gentleman in the... Oh, it seems to come from the very, very last row of the auditorium. Not certain. 36-34. The gentleman way back, the very, very last row.
I noticed, sir, that you are holding up a card. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
What type of card is that?
The card is what is the paper I've written on, and the other is a statement from a bank.
I see, a bank statement.
Yes.
And a card that you've written on. Now, don't let the man with the mic see it, please.
Oh,
I don't want anyone to think that I'm using an associate or a confederate in any fashion. You alone can see that. Is that correct, sir?
That's right.
Is that 36-34-83?
No, sir.
Who is thinking of that number? It may not come from your direction. Is that any part of that right?
Now, it may not come from your direction. I get 36,
you want me to give it
83, very clearly. Whose thought is that, please, if not yours? You see, I cannot single you out. Is that anything like it, sir?
The first two numbers are right.
Then it isn't your first. Will the lady or gentleman thinking of that set of numbers please identify them by raising his or her hand? I cannot locate you. Very well. I'll have to pass on to the next. Who is thinking of the initials? WWL. That is the lady about the 22nd row. 22nd row, is that L-U... L-U-T-T-R-E-L-L or something like that?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Wait a moment. Is that a relative of yours?
Yes, sir.
Husband or brother?
Nephew.
Nephew?
Mm-hmm.
You're asking me to tell you where he is at this time?
Yes.
Is he a German prisoner?
Yes, sir.
Is he interned at a place called Oflag?
Yes, sir.
In Germany?
Yes, sir.
At Station 64?
Yes, sir.
Is his prison number, as dictated by the German government, 1-4, or rather 1-5-3, sir?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, ma'am.
Well, General Danielson, how's Dunninger doing?
Looks to me as if he's outflanking us all at every turn with that crystal mind of his.
Mrs. Fowler?
If this keeps up, we'll have to get earplugs in all the city statues. They'll be asking questions, too.
Well, Jimmy Brown, what do you think about it?
Up to now, he's gotten a trap between first and second.
Roy Acuff.
Mr. Dunninger's kind of like Old Man River. He can just keep rolling on.
Time for not only the studio audience, but Dunninger's audience everywhere to join the fun and fascination of Dunninger's projection. Last week, you'll remember Dunninger projected the name of one of the heroic women's services. Wax. Wave. Stars. And the women Marines. And there were the Wasps. Among our studio audience, 55% more people got waves than any other of the service branches we have just mentioned. And just an hour ago, this wire arrived from Miss Norma Anderson of the Blue Network's production department with the total from our listening audience.
George Wheat, station WMPS, Memphis, Tennessee. Waves led all others by 42%.
And now, Mrs. Fowler, would you open the envelope and reveal the women's service which Dunninger projected?
W-A-V-E-S. Waves.
Next week, Dunninger will broadcast from Atlanta, Georgia, and Atlanta is the inspiration for his choice for projection for tonight. In tribute to Margaret Mitchell's famed book, Dunninger will project the name of one of the characters from Gone with the Wind. It will be either Scarlett O'Hara, Red Butler, Melanie Wilkes, Ashley Wilkes, or Mammy. All set, Dunninger?
Now remember, I will project only one of the names you have heard from this famous book, Gone with the Wind. Please don't try to make up your minds ahead of time. Don't order your impression when you receive it. Now remember, it will be either Scarlett O'Hara, Red Butler, Melanie Wilkes, Ashley Wilkes, or Mammy. All right? Ready? Begin. Concentrate.
Mail your impression of the name projected to Dunninger. D-U-N-N-I-N-G-E-R, Dunninger, care of Chemtone, Blue Network, Radio City 20, New York. Well, Dunninger is in rare form tonight. He has advised us that he would do a double brainbuster, whatever that is. It sounds terrific, so I'll turn the mic over to him and let him explain the whole thing.
Well, Neil, you'll say Dunninger's in rare form tonight. As a matter of fact, the brainbuster I have chosen is one, as you claim, is extremely difficult. But having traveled for the last several weeks as much as I have and leaving tonight for Atlanta right after the show makes it rather difficult to be assured that I will be 100% accurate. I'm going to try very, very hard to accomplish one of the most difficult mental feats that man has ever attempted. Upon this stage, I'm certain my listeners will agree, I am honored by having four persons who are unquestionably outstanding in each and every one of their own chosen fields of endeavor. I'm certain that we can accept the words of the three gentlemen and the lady who have so kindly consented to cooperate with me upon this unique and extremely difficult test. Now, a word or two, please, from the general, from Roy, and from Mrs. Fowler and Mr. Brown. Do you pledge your word that I have asked you absolutely nothing that might help me in the slightest possible manner regarding the test that we are doing tonight? Would you kindly answer? Is that correct, General?
No.
And you, please, Mrs. Fowler. Is that correct?
No.
Now, my judges do not even know what the second part of my brain buster consists of. Is that correct? For this time, you don't even know what I propose to do. Therefore, prearrangement of any caliber would be entirely out of question. Is that not so?
No.
And you, Roy?
No.
Good enough. Hey, Roy is very polite about the thing. He tacked the star on the end. Well, that's the way it is. Now, I'm going to ask for the first part of the demonstration that the judges leave this stage. They're going to walk to different parts of the building. While out, each one is to concentrate his or her mind, as the case may be, upon one number composed of four digits, such as 2196, 4291, or any like combination. Now, the numbers I have suggested, I have merely acted, I trust, as an example. Don't take them if you can help it. On the other hand, if you choose to accept what I call, that's up to you. But don't be guided by anything that I might say. Be sure that your choice is your own. But one thing, please, do not alter your impressions. Don't change your mind. Would you at this time be good enough to leave the auditorium, walk down the left side here of the platform into a room that has a large metal door. The door is to be locked in back of you, and remember this. Do not speak the numbers upon your lips, so that I cannot be accused of having any concealed, well, dictaphones or speakers or anything. Simply concentrate your minds individually, each, upon one lone number. The judges have left the platform. The door has been locked in back of them. Three gentlemen are guarding the door. They are probably 60 or 70 feet away from where I am seated. They cannot hear a word that I am saying to my listening audience. I will mentally attempt to read the impressions of the four judges. I will add mentally, if I can, the digits without placing them upon paper or blackboard. I will simply write, as I receive it, the total to the 16 numbers, the number in sets of four. Write it upon a blackboard as I receive them. In fact, I'm beginning now. I'm going to show this total to my audience here, many hundreds of persons in the studio, and then call it to you, my listeners, over the air. Naturally, I have to write these numbers back as I receive them. I receive 2, 1, 3, 6, 1. Reverse. A total of 16,312. George Weiss, will you make a recording or a record of that? You can't do that. Well, I'll keep it here. 16,312. Now remember, my listening audience, as these four persons come back into the studio, I will attempt to get the impression individually of each and every one. Won't you please take a paper and pencil, write down the numbers for yourselves upon paper as they come in. Will you kindly call them in? The attendant is now walking to the door. He's going to call on the judges as they re-enter, please. The lady, the first one to enter the auditorium or to return to her seat, is Mrs. Fowler. Mrs. Fowler, are you concentrating your mind, and have you concentrated your mind while in the other part of the building upon the digits 6702?
Correct.
6702 for Mrs. Fowler.
The last part of my telephone number.
Well, I didn't know that, of course, did I?
No.
General Daniels, am I correct in saying that you have concentrated your mind upon the digits 6, 8, 8, and 4?
Yes, sir.
6,884 at the approximate distance of 60 feet behind a stone wall and a door of metal. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
The general tells us that is correct. The next number, that I get from the mind of Roy. Roy Acock. He has given me mentally the digits 1, 2, 3, and 4. Is that correct?
Correct. The first ones I ever learned.
Well, it's great to see that you still remember them anyway. That's an achievement. And the last set of numbers from Jimmy Brown. Jimmy, are you concentrating your mind upon an excellent set of numbers? The date when Columbus discovered this great and glorious nation, 1492.
That's right, sir.
I thank you, Mr. Brown. 1492. George Weiss has written all these numbers as I've called them upon a large blackboard. I trust that my listening audience has done likewise. Paper upon a sheet of paper or something. What is the total? George is making mistakes here. Well, that's not the first mistake George ever made, is it, George? Do you remember them, George?
Wait a minute, am I wrong?
Which one have you forgotten?
Well,
you add them wrong.
9, 12, 21, 98, 17... 1923.
No, is he wrong? He's wrong. Will someone add them for George, please?
That's right. 1, 6, 3, 1, 2.
That is my total. 1, 6, 3, 1, 2. Now, for the second half of my brain buster. Upon the table in front of the judges is a copy of the largest one-volume telephone directory in the United States, the Chicago Book. That contains millions of names, numbers, and addresses. We will take that number, which might have been anything, any number at all, in our history of numerals. 16312. I suggest we turn to page 163. Would you kindly do that, please? Page 163. 163, and take the first column, count down to the 12th word, or the 12th name, or the 12th number. Have you done so, Roy?
Yes.
You have the 12th upon page 163, the 12 being the last two digits of our total. I will read the minds of the four judges, seated at a distance of many feet, and attempt, I should say read the fourth, but it's better to attempt to read the name, the address, and the phone number. Is that name, as I receive it mentally, concentrate, please, is that Brown? Clifford
correct.
S. Brown. Is
correct.
That right?
Yes.
That is correct.
Absolutely.
Is the address 3014N Racin, R-A-C-I-N?
Correct.
The telephone number, LAC, Lakeview, 1860. Is that correct?
It sure is.
Well, Mrs. Fowler looks a little bit puzzled. Are you, Mrs. Fowler?
Am I? I couldn't be more puzzled if I were one of the statues I referred to early in the broadcast. I am completely nonplussed.
Well, General Danielson, have you anything to report to our audience?
If I were a top sergeant and radio had no restrictions, I'd be inclined to report that he has a marvelous radio receiving set stored away in his skull.
Well, Jimmy Brown, what are your comments?
All I can say is, when I get back into baseball, if I could read the thoughts of the manager and the coaches like Dillinger has here tonight, the Cardinals will win by 50 games each year.
And Roy Acuff, what's the decision?
Well, I took the night train to Memphis. Mr. D was in Memphis. I came down here at his invitation. I've had a great time and a real thrill. If he'll just come to Nashville, I know he'll be a great sensation. Hallelujah, hallelujah. I'll be shouting hallelujah all the day. I've had a jubilee with this man named Mr. B, and I'll shout hallelujah all the way.
Thank you, Roy Acuff. And now here's Dunninger to say,
the Red Cross needs your help. In these war days, it's service to humanity to buy all that you can in the way of bonds and give the Red Cross all the support that you can. Thank you, and good night.
This is Bob Neal bidding you a pleasant good night for the makers of Chemtone, K-E-M-T-O-N-E, and Chemtone's 50,000 dealers throughout the country. Try Chemtone.
The Chemtone Hour, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 27th of September, 1944, on the NBC Blue Network. Though panned by critics for the most part in terms of his radio gags, Joseph Dunninger, the Mentalist, was a success on NBC Radio through about 1945, where he was replaced on the air, but not before putting up a $10,000 offer to have him be proved wrong by anyone from the listening audience, and no one ever did take him up on that challenge. You're listening to an hour of variety shows on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark Levonier. Now time for one of the most famous ones from radio's golden era. It's Major Bowe's Amateur Hour. It had enjoyed over a decade on WHN in New York, and this broadcast marks the very first night of the show going national on NBC Radio. It turned out to be one of the great radio phenomena, as people would pack their bags and move across the country just for a chance to appear for about a minute on the Major Bowe's program, which essentially was a talent show looking for the next star. Every week, lines of show hopefuls would stretch around the block, and also created an influx of newly homeless people who had left their life behind to appear on the program that held the promise of fame and success, most of whom didn't get a chance to be on the show and would have a hard time finding work. Even in New York, a city can only accommodate so many violinists and tap dancers. And part of the show's legacy is sort of strange because there was no real standout talent that made a success on the program and went on to achieve great fame after appearing in a broadcast, except for one, and it was a member of the Hoboken Four, a singing troupe from New Jersey. That person was Frank Sinatra.
Who speaks for the group?
I will. I'm Frank. We're looking for jobs. How about it? Everyone that's ever heard us liked us. We think we're pretty good. And we play real swing music, too.
Real modern swing music. Ultra-modern music. What's your tune?
The Curse of an Aching Heart.
The Curse of an Aching Heart.
That happened the night of September 8, 1935. Now, the inaugural national broadcast of the Major Bowe's program, the 26 minutes or so that has survived, first heard on March 24, 1935, on NBC.
Tonight, Jason Sanborn presents Major Bowe's Amateur Hour. There have been amateur hours in the theater, and there have been amateurs on the radio. But about a year ago, Major devised a new pattern of radio amateur hour. Something that was entirely original and had never been done before. Major Bowes is, therefore, responsible for the present vogue for amateur hours on the air. It is his proud distinction to be the most copied radio personality today. Major Bowes' own original amateur hour, presented tonight, is made possible by your purchases of Chase and Sanborn's dated coffee, the coffee you know is fresh. These amateurs exhibit their wares. You select the winners by your vote. There are two ways to vote. If you live in the vicinity of New York, you telephone your votes early and often. The number is Murray Hill 8, 9933. I repeat, Murray Hill 8, 9933. In addition, tonight is Chicago night. By special arrangement, Chicago listeners will also vote by calling Franklin 4900. That's Franklin 4900. These Chicago votes will be flashed to us within 5 minutes, and frequent bulletins will be read by Major. For those elsewhere, mailing ballots are supplied free at your grocer's. Or you may, of course, write in on your own stationery. Decide tonight which contestants you wish to vote for and get your official ballot from your grocer tomorrow. Remember, Chicago and vicinity, call Franklin 4900. New York and metropolitan area, call Murray Hill 8 9933, and call quickly. Major will announce the names of the first two Chicago voters. Also, the names of the first two voters from the New York metropolitan area. The leaders in the voting will be given professional engagements in RKO Metropolitan Theaters. So please help these deserving youngsters by voting early and often. I now present Major Bowe.
Thank you, Jimmy. Good evening, friends. This is the proudest moment I've ever known in radio. And I've been at the microphone for more than a decade. And by the same token, I feel a greater responsibility than ever before. Our proceedings, as you'll observe, are informal, without precedent. And you, within sound of my voice, are just as much a part of this show as these youngsters who come to the microphone. The studio's enormous. It seats, I don't know how many, a couple of thousand. And these amateurs, lacking experience, must stand before this great audience and give a performance. It's a task for a seasoned professional, much less a Simon Pure amateur. And so we need your help. We want your votes. Please telephone your choice. Telephone early. Telephone often. You decide the winners, and the winners will receive immediate professional engagement. The studio's crowded with friendly faces. There are millions listening. I'm going to repeat the telephone numbers again. In New York, it's Murray Hill 8, 9933. In Chicago, it's Franklin 4900. In this building, girls are sitting at 200 telephones to take your votes. There should be no line busy. Now, first to the microphone is a four-piece band, the Morris Sisters, four little kid sisters. Piano, two saxophones, and a trap drummer. And this drummer has a little girl as big as a minute and as cute can be. Watch her little spindle legs work. And so the wheel begins to spin. All right. Anybody. Those are the Morris Sisters. Their little orchestra played the 12th Street Rag. Now, we have Percy Wood, Boer War veteran who yodels. All right, Percy, let's hear the yodel.
Yodeling, 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 yodeling.
Well, we like your applause, but we mustn't applaud too long. That's Percy, the yodeler. He was through the Boer War, and we went through one of his yodels, so it's even Steven. All right. Now, what have we here? The merry-go-round has started. It's a crazy quilt, a grab bag, it's a whirligig, it's just a wheel of fortune. Around we go, each of us trying for the brass ring. I can promise nothing because I never know what's coming, but it's a lot of fun. The first telephone call from the New York area is Mr. Martin McLean, and the second call from the New York area is Miss Rose Wills. Thank you very much. Now we have Franklin Jensen, baritone. His application states that he's a photographer. Where were you born, Franklin?
I was born in the Virgin Islands, Major.
Which one? St. Thomas, St. Cross, St. John, where?
St. Thomas, Major.
You see, we touch every part of the United States in these amateur hours. You study singing?
No. Well, just a little bit to help my voice along. I've always wanted to sing ever since I was a little boy.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you want to be? A concert singer, stage, radio? What's your ambition?
Concert singer.
Now, the Roland Hayes and Paul Robeson, Eddie Matthews, huh?
Yes.
Well, in that case, you either want to sing The Glory Road or Deep River or Waterboy. They all do. We all know the song, Paul. They want to sing it. What do you want to sing?
Waterboy.
Waterboy, I thought so. All right, come on.
You jack-o'-diamond, you jack-o'-diamond, I knows you from old boys, yes, I knows you from old. You robbed my pocket, done robbed my pocket, yes, robbed my pocket. Of a silver and gold. What a boy. Where are you hiding? If you don't come, why not tell your mammy? What the...
Yes, that's Franklin Jensen, baritone. Franklin Jensen, baritone. Your prose is lovely, but if you drag it out too much, we're going to lose one or two numbers in the course of the evening. We have so much. Franklin Jensen, baritone from the Virgin Islands. He sang Waterboy. And remember, Murray Hill 8, 9933, and in Chicago, Franklin 4900. Now, one of the noblest of all professions is that of teaching, and frequently one of the least appreciated. I say this having in mind a born teacher, Clyde Doerr, famous saxophone virtuoso. Saxophone, as you know, is a comparatively young instrument. The great symphonies, the older symphonies, have no parts written for saxophone, but it's an instrument with a human quality and is greatly loved and very effective. Now, Clyde Doerr's hobby is to teach the young idea how to toot, right? So I invited him here to bring some of his pupils, and he's got three boys, one 10, and the others are 15 each. That's a total of 40 years amongst the three of them. So we're going to have a saxophone trio. All right, touch them all. Three boys, Lewis Smith, Arthur Puckman, and Maxwell Wexler, the saxophone amateurs. And from Chicago, we have the first bulletin. The first call from Chicago was Jack Heinz. The second call from Chicago was Frank Berry. And they both voted for the Mara sisters. Well, that's quick work. And thanks, Chicago, very much indeed. Next week is Philadelphia week. You see, New York and vicinity always calls, but each Sunday night a different other city. All over the United States, Sunday by Sunday. Tonight, Chicago, and next week, Philadelphia, and so it goes on till it reaches San Francisco. And that'll be a night that I think I'll get up to the microphone myself. But faster and faster swings our little merry-go-round. It's a big show, ladies and gentlemen, only a dime, 10 cents, a tenth part of a dollar. This way, neighbors, step on the inside. The show's going on all the time. Good for a pain in the hip, knee, or ankle, side, back, or chest. Thank you, sir, and you thank me. Neighbor, how'd you like the show? Terrible. That's what they all say, good people. Step on the inside and jump aboard. Now, let's see who's next. What's the application? Mary Miller. Application reads singer from Hamburg. You live in New York, Miss Miller?
Yes,
Mrs.
Mayor.
Miller, I suppose it is.
I suppose.
That's your little baby, is it? That's your baby?
Yes.
Little boy.
I brought him along, Mayor, because I have nobody taking care of him. So
I see.
I think
well,
he'll be all right.
I'm sure he'll be all right. Don't look at me. I'm sure it'll be all right. But for a singer to step up to the microphone, the little boy indicates a story. What sort of singing do you do? Tell us about yourself.
Mezzo-soprano.
Mezzo-soprano.
You know, my husband used to be Steve Chief Stewart, and he traveled all over the country. On account of that, I never get a start, you know, good to go to my career.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, moving around all over the country, of course you can't, and I suppose you're... Ambition is to sing, but sometimes in our ambitions, we forget our real blessings. You'd be the happiest woman in the world if you were a prima donna, wouldn't you?
I would like to sing opera. If anybody would give me a chance, you know.
I know, but how many opera singers would... sing of the opera singers that would give up their opera singing if they could have a child like that?
I never would miss my child for anything or any money in the world.
Wouldn't give up your child.
I wouldn't give up my child, but... Well, my music not either.
Well, maybe you can eat your cake and have it too, huh? What do you want to sing?
I sing Trees, Please.
All right, let's have it.
Arrivo me in Somerville on a nest of robins in a hill up in those doesn't know how plain immediately lives the rain when her man I fools like me but only God
That's Mrs. Mary Miller with a little boy who wants to be an opera singer. Who knows? The telephone's Murray Hill 89933, and in Chicago it's Franklin 4900. Now about auditions. Those in New York and vicinity should write, address your letter to Mazer Bowes Amateur Hour, care of National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, New York City, and state your qualifications. People who have unusual instruments are especially welcome. Tell us about yourself, and if your letter seems promising, we'll invite you to an audition. Please don't telephone for auditions. Right. Now, this is the application of Adele Kaplan. The application states, at the age of 13, won 2 medals, graduated from the Julia Richmond High School, has taken nursery and kindergarten training and studied music, right?
Yes, Major.
You won 2 medals at the age of 13. Sunday school medal?
Oh, what
kind
no.
of medal?
One was from public school, and the other one was from the Metropolitan League Association.
The what?
Metropolitan League Association.
Metropolitan League Association. Baseball.
No.
Oh, well, you have the looks. Whether you have a voice or not, we'll soon find out. What do you want to sing?
I carry you in my pocket.
Well, button up your overcoat, then. Come on.
I carry you in my pocket, in a locket of gold. Do you remain till the sun grows cold? I take a little look each morning, and I take a little look each night.
Is behaving beautifully, I'll say that. I can't see a grouchy face in this whole hall. That was Adele Kaplan. Now we have the first telephone bulletin. First one that's come in from the New York area. The Morris sisters, Percy Wood, Gloria Berger, Franklin Jensen, and Clyde Doss pupils. And here is the telephone call. The Morris sisters got 1,243 calls. Percy Wood, the Udler, got 2. He didn't get a very good start. Matter of fact, the war that went against him. Gloria Berger, 344. Next time she'll be bigger, okay, and I'll telephone myself. Franklin Jensen from the Virgin Islands got 111, and the little amateur saxophonist, 47. So you see the calls are coming in now. That takes a little time to get them in motion, and we're very grateful. And as I look over at Paul Whiteman, who's worried about his performance tonight, hasn't faced an audience for so long. Feels very much good. Now we got who? There he is. One-man band. Al Francis, the one-man band. You know, in starting these amateur hours, I started a vogue for one-man band. I'm really proud of it, too, because all the kids are up in the attics digging out old hoop skirts and tin cans and amalgam fillings and pieces of hose and hose pipe and watering cans and making one-man bands out of them. Some are grand and some are terrible. But one thing is certain, they always have a lot of apparatus. This one has a bass drum and cymbals and an old valve trombone. I can't look at him and talk into the microphone at the same time. Paul, you haven't seen one of those for 20 years, I'll bet. Anyway, we'll see what he has to play. All right. I started a vote for one-man band. not only tone deaf, he's stone deaf. What in the ancient order of Hibernians do to me? My wild Irish rose. Help, police. That's Al Francis, the one... Say, who started that vote for one-man band? I'd like to find out the villain started.
Major, may I interrupt for just a moment, please?
All right, Jimmy.
I think that everybody in here and everyone on the air should know that the first two calls from New York City, that for Mr. Martin McLean and the one for Miss Rose Wills, both voted for Major Bowes. That's two votes for the major. Puts him in a class with a yodeler, I guess. incidentally,
that
Major, we have...
Jimmy.
Pardon?
That makes three of us.
That's three of us.
All right.
We have several telegrams here that I'd like to read at this time, and I think that it really is due you that they should be read. Here's one from Rosa Poncel. My dear Major, with so many achievements already to your credit, it seemed hardly possible that you could add to your laurels. But now your outstanding success in the radio world makes us say once again, bravo and heartiest congratulations. Stop. May you continue for a long time to watch over the striving amateurs and continue to guide those worthy of it into channels for serious study for a musical career. Signed, Rosa Poncel. And here's one from the governor of the state of New York, dated from Albany, Governor Herbert H. Lehman. It's addressed to Major Edward Bowes, and he says, I'm glad to congratulate you on the inauguration of your new radio broadcast and to wish you the success that has characterized all your programs in the past. Signed, Herbert H. Lehman. That's all. Thank you.
Well, I said at the beginning that this is my proudest radio night, and so it is. Now we have who? Al Shuler, ladies' coat, your application says. What do you do with ladies' coats?
Well, I sell them, Nicky.
Say, if you had to buy them, it wouldn't be so easy, would it? And you have an ambition to be a radio singer.
Oh, yes, I have, Major.
Have you had any experience in radio singing?
Well, I had a very unusual experience, Major. About a year ago, I answered an advertisement in the paper for some radio talent. But when I did get there, I saw this agent, and he gave me an audition. Well, a few days later, I received a postcard to see him about a sponsor for a program for me. Well, when I did get there, he greeted me at the door, 50 cents, please. Well, I gave him the 50 cents thinking I might have a job.
Didn't think you were worth a dollar even, did he?
Well, that's very interesting.
I must interrupt you because recently the fraudulent radio schools have been springing up and they work a great injustice. Even for small sums, they get youngsters to come there. No doubt that is your experience. But make it a little briefer. What happened? Did you go on and pay him and take lessons?
Well, I did, and many others did also. Well, here was the beginning of the lesson. You know, he made the 30 or 40 of us stand up in back of his, in front of the seats, you know. And he got up in front of us and said, boys and girls, go this way.
You know, I could have him arrested for giving an impersonation of me. Well, go ahead. What is the second lesson, if any?
Well, I'll tell you, Major. He says, no matter where you go, I don't care if it's in a subway, in an elevator, or outside, anywhere you are. Don't be ashamed of the folks. Just go.
Well, maybe I shouldn't call that school of fraud. Maybe that's the standard. I'm not so sure. But anyway, I'm glad it came up because perhaps the people listening will beware of these fraudulent schools. They really do a great deal of damage. Now, in the meantime, after all those lessons, what do you want to sing?
Well, Major, I'd like to sing My Mother's Eye.
Georgie Jessel's song, huh?
That's right, Major. I think I can sing it just as well as he can.
Well, you won't get as much. Well, there's one thing I'll promise you. You won't get as much money for singing this evening. All right, come on. My mother's eye.
One bright and guiding light that taught me wrong from right I found in my mother's eyes. Those baby tales she told, that rod all paved with gold, I found in my mother's eyes. Just like a wandering sparrow, one lonely soul, I'd walk the straight and narrow to reach my goal. ships and from up above, all unreal, unselfish love. I found in my mother's eyes.
All right, Al Chula, who sells ladies' coats and imitates George Gibbet.
All right, Jimmy. Our operators will be on duty for another half hour, so there's still time for you to telephone your vote. Call Murray Hill 8, 9933 in New York, or Lafayette 7500 in Boston. Elsewhere throughout the United States and Canada, grocers have free ballots for you to use. Or you can vote by letter or postcard sent in care of your own station.
Until next Sunday, good evening, friends.
Major Bowe's Amateur Hour, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 24th of March, 1935 on NBC. Closing out this hour of variety on Tuned to Yesterday. Be with us again for more programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.